joined today by Dr. Marta Santa Maria. One of Dr. Santa Maria's main research interests is the role transport networks can play in economic development. Transport projects are often decades in the planning and delivery, and the economic case for them can change radically from the start of construction to the cutting of the ribbon. Are governments missing out by failing to adapt transport infrastructure to changes in the economic environment? Marta has been investigating this question by looking at what happened to transport networks and to prosperity when Germany was divided into the German Democratic Republic and the Federal Republic of Germany after World War II. Dr. Santa Maria, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. How does the division of Germany help you understand this question of whether governments can and should adapt their transport networks to unexpected change?
Well, so it's great to be here and have this opportunity to talk about my research. And as you said, my work uses the division of Germany as a key part of my paper, of my study. And the reason why I said my study on this specific historical event, the division of Germany, is that I want to understand how governments can adapt infrastructure to the changing economic environment. And in that sense, I wanted to study an unpredicted event that affected the incentives to build the transport infrastructure in a given country. And so the division of Germany is a great example of that. So if I can give you a little bit of background, notice that before the Second World War, Germany was actually a very well integrated territory. It had been a political entity for a long time, and no one would expect at that time that the German country would be divided into East and West Germany in a few decades. So when you look at this historical episode, you see that just because of the way the World War II ended and how Germany was occupied at the end of the world by the Soviet Union and the Allied powers, Germany was occupied by foreign powers, and at some point these two parts of Germany that had been occupied, the West by the Allied powers and the East by the Soviet Union, actually became two independent countries, East Germany and West Germany.
Mm-hmm. And with no transport between the two, very difficult to actually cross the border. Is that?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. So Germany was a well-integrated territory with plenty of railways around the country, and suddenly, basically, in a very unexpected way, it became divided in two, and the western part became West Germany, and it was aligned with the US and the other European nations, while the East became East Germany and became aligned or was under the sphere in some way of the Soviet Union. And the relation between these two countries became basically non-existent. So there was no trade allowed across the border. There was no migration allowed across the border. So this new border really affected how the transport network could be thought of or planned in Germany, and which cities could actually be connected after this big event, the division of Germany.
And how did you approach this? Did you see the historical example and think, right, this is going to be a fantastic opportunity to explore my research question? Which came first, almost?
And so I was very interested in transportation and transport costs. I studied international trade, and one of the important things nowadays is how you ship things. Tariffs are a bit lower nowadays, and therefore we care a bit more about other types of costs that, for example, can be the shipping costs, the transport costs. So I had been thinking about transportation, and I wanted to find some event in which you had a clear shock or a clear episode that affected this transportation cost, and one of the clearest one was a new border that appeared in the middle of a country. So in that sense, it was clearly a very good example of what I was trying to get at. And I found that there was the historical data that I needed. Germany actually has very good historical data, even for the 19th century. So I could find records of trade between European districts. I found historical maps that I digitized. So in that sense, everything came together in the right way. To answer this question of whether governments can adapt transport infrastructure, and if not, what are the costs of in some sense being stuck with the wrong infrastructure, I needed two parts. Basically, I needed a theoretical framework to know what would be the right way to build infrastructure if you didn't have any constraints, if there were no any shocks, or if the division hadn't happened, and so on and so forth. And then we obviously needed this empirical episode that is very interesting, and the historical data. So in terms of the model, I used basically the newest possible or the most up-to-date framework that allows me to look at what is the best way to build infrastructure in a set of many regions with trade between each other and with people that move around. And the model I developed in some sense can tell me where you want to build infrastructure. And then I can take this to the data and understand the differences and the similarities between model and data.
It's because presumably the German government, they had some very big infrastructure projects in hand before the Second World War. So were you looking at those and then comparing the plan for what happened, then the reality of the situation that then developed? Because one of the challenges of putting these transport infrastructure projects in place must just be the time scale on which it takes to actually build something.
Yes, exactly. That's completely right. So one of the things that I didn't know about when I chose this specific historical episode was that indeed the German government of the 1930s had designed a huge infrastructure plan. This was one of the star policies of the Nazi Party, to build these huge autobahns, these highways that would connect the country and would be modern and in some sense would put Germany in the highlight of the international news. And these highways were planned to cross the whole country. So basically, a lot of them were planned east-west, obviously, to connect Berlin with the rest of German cities. And I'm able to use this plan and to compare it to what happened after the division. That's exactly what I do in the paper. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And what sort of things emerged from the data and from the study?
So what I find is that the West German government, after 1949, when Germany was divided, basically inherited two things from the previous government in terms of infrastructure. First, this plan, as we were mentioning, a pre-war plan that was designed without any anticipation of the new borders that would appear. And second, there were around 3,000 kilometers of highways that had already been built during these 1930s and 1940s. And these highways were built, again, without anticipation of the border. A lot of them were on the east-west direction. So the West German government had to build infrastructure, complete the network using these already built links, but could actually adapt to what had not been built. And that's exactly what I find when you compare the actual network that emerges in the years 1970s, 1960s, with the plan. You find two main changes. One, some highways are never built. The ones that had been planned to cross the border, obviously, were never actually implemented. And then we see some new highways that had never been planned that appear actually on the west of the country. So some of these highways are near the border with France. Some of these highways are on the north-south orientation, which is actually how West Germany is oriented. And some of them were going towards the southern border with Switzerland. So, yeah, so we see quite a bit of reshaping of the original plan.
Mm-hmm. And were you able to find out the sort of consequences of these changes? Presumably a good network means more trade and more efficiency in terms of the cost of moving goods around.
Yeah, exactly. So once I documented that indeed the West German government reacted to the shock, and I find that this reaction is partially very aligned with what the model would predict of optimal infrastructure, I use the model to understand the economic gains in some sense of this reaction. So I do find that the West German government took the right decision in the sense that both welfare and real GDP or income increased in the country compared to what they would have accomplished building the original plan. So in particular, I find that welfare increased by 1%. And if you take into account international trade that actually was taking place or started to take place with France and other Western countries with the European integration process, then these welfare gains were up to 1.8%. So the government reaction was indeed very good, but obviously the government couldn't change what had been already built. That was the one of the constraints.
So that the government almost inherited a scheme that was no longer very appropriate.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So as I was saying, they could react to some extent, but obviously there was this inherited part of the network that was already built. And as you were hinting at, this network was actually suboptimal in the sense that a lot of these highways that were built in the 1930s were connecting the West German cities like Frankfurt or Hanover or Munich to Berlin. And these links were no longer so useful because actually Berlin was on the other side of the border. So indeed, I used the model to understand what would be the optimal way to build infrastructure in West Germany without any constraints, if we had to build things from scratch. And this network is different from the one that I find in the data. And even if I try to make it as optimal as possible, these inherited networks actually constrained the amount of welfare, the income that you could get from these investments. And indeed, this cost seems to be quite large, which means that the flexibility that was lost because of these inherited networks actually was costly in terms of economic outcomes.
Having built the model and understood what has been happening in this historical situation, can you apply it to current government decision making? Are there any lessons for countries today?
Yeah, so that's a very good question that I get a lot because I'm looking at this very specific and unique historical episode. But indeed, I think this kind of model and this kind of approach of combining some historical episode or some empirical event and the model is quite useful for understanding many things that happen nowadays. So in some sense, the German division allows us to observe a sort of mistake in road planning and building, in the sense that these roads were built without knowing what would happen in some years' time. So understanding how the government reacted and what were the gains and losses is super interesting. So we don't have many episodes that are as stark as this division of Germany in history, because obviously the division had many negative consequences. But we could think of unexpected or unpredicted events that change the politics or the way we think about trade. One of the things that I have in mind is the result of the Brexit referendum in the UK that was quite unexpected, and in some sense is going to shift in some way the trade patterns of the UK with respect to the world. And this is going to affect probably the type of infrastructure that the UK needs. Other examples could be the victory of a political candidate that was unanticipated, or if you want to think of more in terms of geography, for example, we have some episodes of creation of cities in different countries. The creation of Brasilia, for example, the capital of Brazil in the 1960s is one good example of a change in geography that was not expected, or that was imposed in some sense, that we could use to think about these issues.
Is it a sort of chicken and egg situation that the infrastructure follows trade patterns, or that if you put in networks in place, then trade becomes easier? I'm just thinking about the Brexit example you mentioned there, that trade is going to change, but you know, do we know how quite yet, or is that something that your model will shed light on?
Indeed, it's a bit of an egg chicken situation, and that's why looking at these kind of unilateral changes in the geography or in a border helps me discipline a bit what the model tells me, because it goes both ways. Obviously, you want to build infrastructure in places that are trading, so that this flow of goods is actually benefiting from this better or higher quality infrastructure. But the literature has shown that in some cases, not always, but in many cases, when you build infrastructure, you also create trade. What is the balance in some sense? What is stronger? It's an empirical question. So there's some research showing that building very small roads, rural roads in India, for example, has not created a lot of trade. And obviously, it could depend on which places you're connecting and whether you need big changes to create this trade, or you just need to improve the transportation a little bit. So it's these are all, if you want, empirical questions that depend on the situation. And we really need to do a lot more research on you know, as many places as possible to keep building this this knowledge. I am thinking a little bit about infrastructure in the European Union, because obviously, as you were saying, we've had this process of European integration, and at the same time, infrastructure has been improving a lot, and it's not clear what has helped what, or if infrastructure has been allocated in the right places. I also have a project on Pakistan to understand the construction of the highway network in Pakistan, because it has a very strategic trading place, basically. And that's also something we are looking into. But obviously, these are all projects are in our initial stage right now. I hope to keep working on this topic. I think it's quite interesting.
And is there any mileage in looking at the other half of the story, almost the reunification of Germany? Would there be anything to reveal there in terms of how the network has responded to that incident?
I am thinking of looking a little bit at the reunification. In some sense, the answer is yes, there was a big role of infrastructure. And actually, the unified German government after 1989 created a massive plan with 17 infrastructure projects to reunify the country. So clearly you see that the fact that these two countries or these two regions were separated for 30 years and infrastructure was not built between them obviously had to be replaced by something different once the country is unified. So in that sense, there was a massive effort in building infrastructure between East and West Germany that I don't think has been quantified or studied, but there was a lot of other things going on at the time to reunify both countries. So in that sense, I think I would need a bit more knowledge, and probably I would like to be working with more people to understand really well all of the reunification process, because that was quite complex. Yeah.
Yes, many, many layers to it.
Exactly.
The challenge of building these, designing flexibility into these projects must be huge. I mean, is the need for flexibility something that governments can take into account? Is there anything you can share from your findings?
This is something quite new. I think policymakers are aware of this challenge that economics and the world basically is changing very fast, and sectors are booming and industries are decaying. People are migrating. So in that sense, I think we know that we need to take into account in some way how fast the economy changes, and especially in emerging countries where urbanization rates are so high, it's really very difficult to know what are the next challenges, what are the next changes. But I think this is something we are beginning to understand. And I didn't work yet so much on this, but I have thought about it. Some things that come to mind from studying infrastructure projects are, first, the cost of infrastructure projects. So obviously, if there is this uncertainty, you want to make sure that the very costly projects are built in the places or between regions that you know are going to be trading a lot for a longer time. This could be because, you know, there's some fundamental reason why two regions are trading a lot. Maybe they need each other. Maybe they complement each other. So if you want to build a high-speed rail system like ones that you see in Japan, where these bullet trains are going so fast, this is massively expensive investments. So you want to be very sure of where to place those. Whereas other type of buildings, like improving roads, I think that's something that probably is a good idea in any place, because you want to have a dense and new and modern road network in that sense. And trucks and cars actually can be repurposed and travel around the network without much problem. And in that sense, they're more flexible. So that's one of the things, the cost. The other one, as I was mentioning now, is the type of infrastructure. Rails and the tube. This type of infrastructure is very rigid. It needs a network. You cannot really go off network. Whereas if you think of planes or buses or cars, these are in some sense more easily adapted, or you can improve or increase the service if you need to.
Is there a hierarchy? Would you make a sort of recommendation to government in a developing country that said, look, if you're thinking about infrastructure, then perhaps roads might be more flexible than rail? Or is that just sort of not fair?
I don't, yeah, I mean, I don't have a recommendation to make right now, but it is true that we do see this approach in some developing economies. First, because sometimes these massive projects take too long. So in some sense, maybe it's easier to just improve roads and set up, for example, a bus transit system. So this is something that, for example, has been done in Bogota. Basically, they reserved one of the lanes or two lanes of big highways only for a bus that is basically a commuting system. And this has worked really well. So this is something that Nick Sivanidis, that is a professor at Berkeley, has been studying. And a similar system is being put in place in Pakistan. So that's something that you could do. You could use the roads you have and make them, you know, partly limited access to a bus transit system. That's something very flexible that you can set up easily with the infrastructure you have.
Mm-hmm. So it's fairly clear that flexibility ought to be designed into a project, that it would be better for a government to think about how they might change in response to future challenges that we as yet don't even know about.
I think so. It's difficult to, I mean, I don't expect governments to plan for everything. Obviously, it's impossible to expect governments to do this. But I do think that having some model to forecast how the economy is going and make, you know, a 10-year plan projection on how your sectors are growing, which cities are growing faster than others, and be able to take sort of a forward-looking approach. I think that would be very helpful, both in rich economies and in middle-income countries and low-income countries. And I think that's something that governments could do. The type of model I build is sort of static, but there's people working on dynamic models of a similar type. And hopefully, if policymakers are interested, it would be nice to work together with them to think a little bit about where the country is going or where the economy is going, which sectors you think are going to boom, or which sectors you want to help boom or enhance in some sense. I think this kind of, at least this kind of economic forecasting that is done by central banks, for example, could be applied to infrastructure network and other types of investments.
So although your project looked at something that happened more than 50 years ago, even it's really bang up to date, and the lessons that have come from it could influence governments now and could help them make better decisions going forward. Is that fair?
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. I hope that I'm contributing a little bit to this big question, and I think it's interesting of how we distribute goods and people in space. And hopefully, yes, I think my idea is to be able to work a little bit with policymakers as well, and to study also nowadays questions, you know, and nowadays challenges.
So as well as thinking about changes in future trade flows, one of the challenges that we are facing as a global economy is climate change. Is that something that governments could try and build into their future plans, or ought to be thinking about in their future plans?
Indeed. It seems that we should be thinking a lot about climate change, and obviously where you place infrastructure is going to depend a lot. Sorry, the optimality of where you place infrastructure is going to depend on your geography and on your climate. So there's some really interesting work on Vietnam and how roads are very coastal in Vietnam, and this may not be optimal if the sea level rises. This is work by Claire Balboni, who's an assistant professor at MIT. And I've been thinking also a little bit about other types of events that affect infrastructure and cities, for example, floodings, hurricanes. All these type of extreme weather events are going to be more frequent given our current situation in the global warming cycle we are in. And governments should try to plan ahead and think of infrastructure projects that are also respectful to the environment and protected from these type of situations. Yes.
Just thinking about moving away from research into some of the teaching that you're doing, are you able to bring any of these projects and studies into the lecture room, or are you teaching different topics?
Yeah, so I am able to talk about the work that I do and the work that my colleagues do quite a bit. So I'm teaching economic development for undergrads. I think it's a second year module. And I'm also teaching a trade and international economics topics for the PhD students. So in that sense, both of these courses are very related and close to the research that I do. And I try to give as many examples as possible when I'm teaching of this type of work or the work I'm doing, the work that other colleagues are doing. I think it's important to remind the students that economics is an applied social science. And in that sense, we study economic growth, inequality, migration, international trade, all of these things. When you talk about these questions in class, I feel that students are quite interested. And especially when you're teaching tough topics, you know, some difficult theory or some empirical methods, it's very important to show them what they can look at and what they can study with these kind of methods. I think they are quite motivated and engaged when they see that you can take these tools and actually put them into understanding questions in the real world. I find that they do like to listen about these type of questions and research.
Dr. Santa Maria, thank you very much for joining us for the podcast, and thank you for speaking about your work.
Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun, yeah.